Hello and welcome to the Other Half podcast, where we talk about the other half of life that doesn't make the highlight reel. The other half of life looks like going off script, telling stories, and sharing poignant insights on the Enneagram, entrepreneurship, and relationships. I'm Justin Boggs, certified Enneagram coach and entrepreneur.
And I'm Meredith Boggs, writer and speaker behind the Other Half blog.
Welcome to episode 32 of the Other Half podcast.
Yeah. Today we're going to be talking about childhood wounds and attack on virtue. So kick us off, Jay.
Well, this idea comes from Chris Hertz again in his book, The Sacred Enneagram. Oftentimes we use the phrase childhood wound, and he says, I don't like that phrase. He says, I want to change that phrase to an attack on our virtue.
Which I deeply appreciate, because I think a lot of people feel conflicted about the childhood wounds when they get deep enough into the Enneagram and they start looking at the childhood wounds. I think they can be kind of confusing and really make you question.
Well, they're super polarizing as well.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. They're polarizing and they really make you question, oh my gosh, am I this type? Because I didn't have a caregiver who was physically or emotionally abusive to me, or, you know, I didn't feel this way as a child. And so I think it can be confusing for people.
Yeah. Which is why we wanted to do this episode, right?
Yeah.
A couple of reasons why Chris makes the claim that we should switch this verbiage to an attack on virtue. Real quickly, let me say what an attack on virtue means. Essentially, our childhood wound is a lie that we grew up to start believing, and a coping mechanism that we learned and able to kind of like deal in life, right? They're not good or bad. They are statements. So
he kind of talks about them in correlation to Keating's programs, that it's right. Not that these are inherently bad. And if you aren't familiar with Keating's programs, we talked about it more in depth in the last episode. They're not inherently bad, but it's when we start to lean on them. Mm-hmm. And kind of use them as a crutch or a way to function in life that they become negative.
Correct. And so, when you start to lean on them, you begin to over-identify yourself.
Yeah.
Right. And we've talked about how the problem, or why that's that over-identification with a portion of yourself, is a fractioned version of you, because it's just a little bit of you and not your entire, all of you. Mm-hmm. Another reason why we wanted to bring up childhood wounds is because the Enneagram is not an excuse for bad behavior. And oftentimes people will use a childhood wound as an excuse to behave a certain way.
Or just kind of like, well, that's just how I am.
Right. And that's not what they're for. They're supposed to shed light into becoming a little bit more aware of who you are at that motivation, that deep self-understanding level, that motivation level. So that you can learn in a different and a new way how to get rid of personality, how to take the mask off and enter into that place of, this is Christ in me meeting Christ in you.
Yeah. I think, something else that we talk about a lot together, and we talk about in smaller settings with people who are really diving into the Enneagram, but talking about childhood wounds and trauma have become almost kind of like these buzzwords that we are using a lot now. And I think it's really important to make sure that you don't confuse the two, and that you don't, I think it's important to look at them separately instead of overlaying one with the other.
Keep going. Why?
Because I don't think that, I think you wade into some very treacherous waters when you try to use the Enneagram in the context of real trauma.
Right.
I'm not a licensed therapist or anything of that sort, but I know from doing my own pretty hardcore work in therapy that you wade into some deep waters if you start to look at trauma and kind of distill it down or simplify it to something like a type on the Enneagram,
right,
or kind of like put it in a box.
And it just jacks you up even more.
Yeah.
Even more so. Yeah. These,
I will also say this as it pertains to childhood wounds and trauma. I think that this is also where you can get really in trouble with it is when you use your trauma or your childhood wound per se as a way to make sense of yourself to the world. You kind of touched on it when you were talking about not using it as bad behavior, but I think that there's a huge piece of identity that's found in your childhood wound or in your trauma that it's like, well, this is why I am. And mm-hmm. you know, without my trauma, like I have no foundation for understanding why I operate, why I think, why I feel, why I behave the way that I do. And that's not how we were created to live. That's not who we were created to be. And that is not to minimize any real trauma. I think that's to look at it objectively for what it is, and then to look at the Enneagram for what it is and what it can do.
Yeah. I just completely agree. I've got nothing else to add to that.
I don't know if you're being silent because you're like, this girl is crazy.
No.
Okay.
Another thing that I want to lay. So we're going to dive a little bit deeper into these attacks on virtue here in a second. But another kind of general disclaimer is that these childhood wounds or these attacks on virtues that we're going to speak to aren't the fault of the parents. Mm-hmm. They're not the fault of the parents.
Yeah. It doesn't mean that you grew up in a horrible home.
Correct.
And your parents sucked. These might have been amazing.
Right. These childhood wounds are simply repeated behaviors that we learned as kids to make our way in life. The gift in understanding childhood wounds from an Enneagram perspective is that they become an opportunity for more inner growth and healing mm-hmm. over time once we start to recognize them and understand those trigger moments and stuff like that. And then before we dive in, Chris told this story in his book, and I thought it was beautiful. He talks about a passage in John 9:1-3, and we've all heard this story. It's about when Jesus healed the blind man, and then when they were walking beside the blind man, his disciples asked Jesus why this man was blind. They said, was it because of his parents' sin that he was born blind? Was it because of his sin that he was born, that, you know, well, that he was born, was it because of his parents' sin? Jeez, lady.
Loud.
And Jesus said, I love this answer in the context, especially in the context of the Enneagram. Jesus said that this man was born blind, quote, because so that God's works could shine forth through this person. So Jesus' answer to the disciples about why this man was born blind, his answer was that he was born blind so that God's works could shine forth through this person. Sometimes, bottom line is the way that we are is no one's fault but sin's. So because we are born into sin, we are illegitimate, right? We cannot be in oneness with God. Our behaviors, our actions, our coping mechanisms, our childhood wounds, they're all sinful. But the purpose of telling that story is because there's opportunity. I want to shed light into the fact that there's opportunity for us to recognize these wounds as opportunities for God's works to shine forth, mm-hmm. for God to be known. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So do you want to dive into each type?
Yeah, we're going to walk through the childhood wounds. We're going to go through all the types, 1-9, talk about the lie, their childhood wound, and then the virtue that they all possess.
So once again, these aren't changing the idea from a wound to an attack on virtue. So the type one, the perfectionist, their childhood wound starts with the lie that you must always be better than you are. These lies are kind of hard to hear also because immediately, every time I hear the lie of the three, I immediately think, shut up, no. So just take them in slowly, I guess. I don't know. But the lie of the one is you must always be better than you are. The childhood wound, quote unquote, or the attack on virtue comes from this place of in childhood that they, so I use the word felt very, very strategically in all these. So these children felt heavily criticized or not good enough. They felt like the rules may have been inconsistent. Now, once again, this goes back to childhood wound is not the fault of the parent. right? But perception is reality, especially as kids. Yeah. So when you perceive or feel like you're heavily criticized or that you're not good enough, you start to believe the lie that you must always be better than you actually are. Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm gonna pause real quick and say this. I think that we talked about this in the very beginning of the episode, that this season has to be covered in so much grace. Mm-hmm. And I think that this is a crucial part of the Enneagram journey, where each person has to have so much grace for themselves and so much grace for their family of origin. Cause I remember I like held myself, I don't even know what the right word is, but in coming to learn the lie and the wound and the virtue of an eight, I like almost held myself in so much contempt of like, well, Meredith, how in the world could you have felt that way? Or how in the world can you see the world this way? Because your parents they were not perfect, but they were great. And I grew up in a really amazing home. And I just really am so thankful for that here in adulthood. But it's like, it doesn't negate that, but it also doesn't negate the attack on virtue that I experienced. So I just wanted to throw that into there to say that as we walk through this, just, I hope you all feel so covered in grace. And I hope that you are able to cover your families of origin, your parents, in so much grace.
Yeah. Well, and the fact of the matter is that this is about you, mm-hmm. right? This, like, the Enneagram is about you and your own growth and your own awareness and your own maturity. It's not about anybody else's.
Yeah.
And so take these statements with grace. And honestly, with like, I almost look at a lot of this from a pragmatic type of lens, where it's like, it's no one else's fault. Mm-hmm. This is exactly how God made me. Mm-hmm. And so I need to be able to recognize when I'm triggered and I start to believe the lie that, you know, that I grew up with. Mm-hmm. This is not about anybody else except for yourself. Mm-hmm. So all that to say for the one, the virtue is essentially, this is Christ in me and Christ in you, meaning mm-hmm. Christ in you. The virtue that a one brings to the table is perfection, mm-hmm. right? They're called a perfectionist. A lot of times that can have a negative connotation, but there's a blessing mm-hmm. and in the one's ability to truly see what perfect could be mm-hmm. and call it up and out. And the virtue the light that is shown by that is a reflection of Jesus in Christ, because he is perfect. Right. Mm-hmm. Which I think is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Number two, the lie of the number two is that your personal needs are selfish. To make that even more simple, your needs are selfish. That's the lie that the two believes. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, so the wound or the why behind that lie is that as kids, these twos felt, once again, they felt this way. Perception's often reality when we're kids. They felt loved only when they were helping or pleasing others. Oftentimes it was their parents, or if you're an oldest child, oftentimes it was taking care of the rest of the kids. Mm-hmm. In that, they also felt like love was not reciprocated fairly. So they felt like they always had to be helping something or someone in order to get reciprocal love, mm-hmm. in order to get love. But it still was all like, it was an on-demand type of thing. It's not you're loved just because I chose to love you. Mm-hmm. You can imagine how that cycle of life feels like a prison almost, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why the virtue of the two is actually will and freedom. Will, free will, or freedom. I think that that's a really, really cool and interesting dynamic. But I can only imagine how difficult it would be to get to. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that?
No, I just deeply feel for twos. And I think part of that is like, I feel like I identify a little bit with them in terms of my stress and security response in going to a two. But I just feel so deeply for them. I just cannot imagine how exhausting that must feel. Yeah.
Yeah, it's rough. I can only imagine, but I would say that I would think that it's rough. On to the three. So the three's lie is admiration equals love. I'm a three, obviously. And even saying that out loud, had I not had the help of the Enneagram, I would think, well, yeah, that's just a different word for love. Can you tell me, you in your words, Mayor, tell me why that's a lie? Admiration equals love. How is that a lie?
Because admiration is all about what you do versus love is for who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. The wound for these, for the threes are that they felt rewarded only when they did good things and discounted when they did not perform. So admiration, they felt like they only, they got admiration when they did good things, but then equally they felt unimportant, without value, when they were not performing, when they did not achieve things. Their virtue is hope. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm feeling a little bit lost talking about threes because it's myself. Can you help me here? How is hope of the virtue of a three?
I see hope so much in you. I'll just speak to it this way. I see hope so much in you when the hope in the sense that that's the gift that you bring to the world. I see that when you are able to step into this place of really kind of setting aside all those things that you do and work towards and have accomplished and just kind of like stand there who you are. And it's like, when I see you doing that, it's like, oh yeah. My gosh, like this is a gift that you bring to the world. This is a weird like sort of thing. And I think some of the people listening might get it if they know you personally, but I think about the gift of a three when you stand in front of a whiteboard and help people, whether it's in a professional setting or whether it's like you're helping people kind of like dream up their business they've always wanted to do, or like flesh out an idea or something like that. I see hope so much when you do that, because it's not about what you're doing in that moment that's valuable to those people. You're not providing something. It is a hilarious dichotomy, because what you're doing for them is extremely valuable. But in that moment, the gift that you're giving them is not what you're doing for them.
Accomplishing anything.
Yeah. It's who you are.
Right. Yeah. It's who you are. So, that's a good, like, as soon as we are able to recognize the lie and acknowledge the wound, we can begin to get rid of them. We can begin to say that this is a lie and I'm not going to believe it. And as soon as we can get rid of that, that's us getting rid of the personality. It's to us to be able to take the mask off.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm able to get up in front of a whiteboard and not worry about winning or succeeding or looking good or accomplishing, you know, or solving that big problem. Mm-hmm. And just if I can avoid all those things because I believe that it is a lie, then I can just be myself and the result is hope, is what you're saying. Yeah. That's cool. The lie that the four believes is that you will leave me. These children, they felt like
they felt abandoned.
They felt alone. They felt cut off from a source of love. And they couldn't understand why that was the case. So their fours are super, super introspective. And after they felt cut off, they also couldn't understand why that was the case.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really sad to think about, I think. Mm-hmm. Their virtue is, Chris uses the word origin. So I would use the word, it's almost like, I don't know what the right word would be. Authenticity comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Origins kind of speaks to understanding who you really are,
mm-hmm.
and who other people really are. For if they can get rid of, recognize the lie and believe that they will not be abandoned, at that moment, they intrinsically understand their identity. Mm-hmm. I'm chosen. I'm loved. I'm perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfectly made. And that's what that's what Origin kind of speaks to. Mm-hmm. They can understand them for themselves and for everyone else. That's why the four has the gift when they're in a healthy space and they don't believe the lie. That's why they have the gift to sit down next to anyone and grieve like really, really, really well.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're the they're the ones that you think of that they're truly present to. Mm-hmm.
To grief.
They're truly present to grief. And I think truly present to joy, whatever it is that the other person, you know,
pure. Yes. Yeah, that's the origin, pureness of right? It. That's, mm-hmm. that's what that origin word kind of speaks to. Mm-hmm. Present to the real, mm-hmm. Right in front of you thing, mm-hmm. which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
For the five, the lie is intimacy equals intrusion. You go to a five in stress. Mm-hmm. What does that mean to you?
Just that people are going to bother me. Like I need them to not bother me.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I think about it. It's more.
Well, that's
complex than that.
It's not more complex. I would just change the verbiage a little bit for if a five was actually speaking, they would say people are going to intrusion for you equaled bothering you. Mm-hmm. Intrusion for them equals insecurity. Like it's not safe. I'm no longer safe.
Mm-hmm.
They're in the fear triad, and intimacy would equal an unsafe environment for them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the lie that they believe.
Mm-hmm.
These children felt intruded upon as kids and thus learned how to keep a low profile through building walls, retreating into their own mental realm.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's the childhood one. The virtue, which I told the virtue of a five to a five friend once. The virtue is transparency. And I told that to a friend once and he just laughed. He just laughed at it. And he was like, he said, I'll be transparent with you. He said, I'll be honest with you and I'll answer your questions or whatever you're looking for. Honestly. And I said, well, there's a difference between honesty and transparency.
Mm-hmm.
Transparency means that I get to see into you just as much as you get to see into me.
Mm-hmm.
Honesty is I don't get to, you get to keep your walls up mm-hmm. and built mm-hmm. while you're just speaking honestly to me.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, screw that then.
Yeah.
But, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
Transparency only can happen through intimacy mm-hmm. when your walls are not up. And at that point, you get to see the virtue of a five, which is really cool mm-hmm. and a special, rare moment.
I think it's cool when you look at all the virtues of these types and you think about different people that you know or different settings that you've been in that you've seen these virtues. And it's like, oh my gosh, that is the true, pure gift of who you are
yeah.
and what you bring to the world. Because I even think about friends that we have that are fives when they lean into that transparency
when you get to share
rather
that moment.
Than just honesty. And mm-hmm. you're like, you just feel so honored and so privileged to have experienced that.
It's that moment that that is
Christ in me,
Christ in me,
Christ in you. Yeah.
That's a beautiful moment. Sixes, the lie that they believe, or tend to believe is there's no such thing as a safe place. The sixes lost faith as kids, in being protected, or they lost faith in the people that they originally had believed in or trusted in that were going to keep them safe. And thus when that happened, they started doubting everything.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason the doubting became the coping mechanism. So if I doubt everything and everyone, I can maintain my own safety mm-hmm. and security. The unfortunate piece of that is that not only do they doubt everything and everyone externally, they also doubt themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Which sounds awful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no surprise that their virtue would be faith, courage, strength. Mm-hmm. ironically, you know, the six, because they're always doubting, they've actually, they're the best plan B, C, D, E, F, G people out there, because they've thought about every other scenario that could happen. Mm-hmm. That's a gift. That's a blessing. Only if it's partnered up with strength and faith and courage to do it.
Yeah.
I think that one's pretty cool. It requires courage and faith in yourself as a six. It requires courage and faith in yourself to actually even speak up in a moment as to what you think should be done or what, as to what they think should happen. Mm-hmm. Sevens. The lie that they believe is that you are the only one that can nurture yourself. I don't really like that one. I wish I had better words for it, but nurture is kind of the theme here. They felt deprived of nurture as kids, and so they learned that they could medicate it, that they could self-soothe to medicate it. And so oftentimes self-soothing, like when I think of the word self-soothing, I think of a baby sucking their thumb. Mm-hmm. Or like sometimes you'll put like sugar and what do we do in China to teach kids? Now I'm going off script, but, yeah, sevens.
I would try to help you out, but I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't either. self-soothing for a seven obviously looks like looking at the positive options, relying on themselves only and, looking at the silver lining, because it makes me feel a little bit better.
Or creating that silver lining.
Correct. That would be the coping mechanism.
Yeah.
The virtue for a seven is wisdom. And we all know that wisdom can only come from an honest, true assessment. It can only come from discernment. Mm-hmm. It cannot come from only looking at the silver lining or creating one, which is pretty, that's pretty cool when you see a seven sitting in that space of speaking wisdom. Mm-hmm. Because when they do speak that wisdom, you know that they've gone through the inner battle of I'm not only looking at the positive thing here.
I just had, I was talking on the phone with one of my really good friends who's a seven this week, and we've been friends for probably 5 years or so now, but she's had some pretty, you know, just big life things happen and has like really done some very serious personal work over the last few years. And we were talking on the phone this week and it was such a gift. She's one of my go-to people that I call, you know, whether it's for something about podcasting or book proposals or just like, hey, what do you and your husband do about this? Or, you know, just any time that you need to get another perspective, get some wisdom, some discernment. And in talking to her this week, it was just like, it was just such a in your face moment of like, oh my gosh, this is the gift that the sevens bring to the world when they've sat in pain and they've sat rather than self-soothing with all the positive things that they could come up with.
What was the story? Or give me the scenario so we can understand the example. What was like, you asked her advice on something?
Well, no, I was just saying that in the conversation this week, it was so apparent to me that it was like, this is.
Oh, I'm experiencing Christ in you right now because of the wisdom.
Yes. And it's only because I've known her for 5 years and seen what she's walked through and the work that she's put in. That you can really realize the gift that it is that a seven brings when they've put in that time to do that work and the gift of, the virtue of wisdom that they can bring.
So I hope that it's beginning to make sense, this phrase of an attack on virtue, because to everybody out there, because we know what those sweet, sweet moments are like when we get to experience Christ in you, Christ in someone else. And yet we also know that it's fleeting, right? And that it's rare, which means we live day to day to day with our virtues being attacked, which is, that's kind of a crazy thing to think about. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about eights. the lie of the eight is that vulnerability is weakness, and weakness and that weakness will be used against me. Tell me what that, what do you feel? What do you think when you hear that?
I just think, yeah, 100%.
But do you acknowledge the fact that it is a lie?
Yeah.
Okay. But it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The wound, these kids felt like their environment was unsafe. And because they felt like it was unsafe, they had to mature, grow up, and be strong. That's the real factor. They felt like they, unsafe is probably too strong of a word. And you had a hard time with this statement when you were getting into the Enneagram.
Yeah.
Unsafe is probably not the right word. It's more so that they felt like they had to be strong themselves in order for them to feel secure.
Mm-hmm.
They had to only trust themselves, rely on themselves, be strong in order for them to be, feel safe growing up. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I feel like I've touched on it a little bit, so I don't want to, you know, we don't have to camp here for too long, but I think a lot of the, I do not resonate with an unsafe environment. My home growing up was not physically or emotionally unsafe in any way. But I do really resonate with feeling the need to be strong, to provide for my own security, that vulnerability is weakness and it'll be used against you. And obviously I think everyone that's done any kind of work with the Enneagram, you can kind of see the pattern that if you hold to that, if you operate from that wound or from that attack on your virtue, you see how it really messes up your life the older you get. How it just really can be destructive in your relationships and in your faith. And yeah.
What I think is cool is that the truth is that vulnerability is not weakness, and you have weaknesses, and they will not be used against you. Mm-hmm. Always. They will not always be used. Now, we can't say that they never will be, but what's cool about this is that if the eight's virtue is truth, they have to believe truth before they can speak it.
Yeah.
They have to believe the truth of, oh, I don't have to be strong, the strong one in this scenario.
Or I'm not going to be betrayed or...
Correct. In order for me to feel safe, I don't have to be the strong one. Or in order for me to be feel safe, I can't believe that they're going to betray me.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can't believe that they're going to leave me.
Mm-hmm.
And only once you believe that truth are you able to shine that virtue of truth, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on that?
Mm-mm. Number nine.
Number nine.
Last but not least.
Their lie is that your presence doesn't matter. This is one of the most powerful statements, I think. And part of my heart breaks when I hear it too, because everyone's presence matters.
Mm-hmm.
And yet this is the lie that they believe every minute of every day. That's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
These kids felt ignored, or they felt attacked for having a presence. It's less about needs and it's more about their presence, whereas either felt ignored or it felt attacked. Their own needs, their own desires, their own ideas, their own passions. And so the way that they chose to cope with it was by maintaining a low profile, blending in, understanding the needs, passions, desires of everybody else. And their virtue is love. So they're at the top of the Enneagram. Love is the greatest of all. What's the Bible say? It's the thing that we're supposed to do the most.
And the greatest of these is love. Now these three remain.
That's it. Yes.
Hope and love. But the greatest is love.
Yeah.
Got you, babe.
You got me. It's really cool to be able to see a nine step into that virtue of love. But they have to understand, they have to love themselves first. They have to understand that their presence does matter before they can even dive into that space of loving someone else.
Yeah.
You have to understand your identity and value in Christ and love yourself in that way first, mm-hmm. before you can begin to understand everyone else's. So we talk about your Enneagram type is a blessing and a curse. It can be a blessing and it can be a curse, right? Mm-hmm. The coping mechanism of the nine of looking at everyone else's desires, needs, pain points, and focusing on that could even feels good to other people, obviously, but it could even feel good to a nine because they're still maintaining a low profile. Mm-hmm. But the problem with that is that they're still believing that their presence doesn't matter. And thus they're not able to really love those people. Only until they understand that their presence does matter and that they need to love themselves first, can they begin to actually love other people, mm-hmm. which is cool. I'm gonna wrap with a couple of thoughts, just to bring us back full circle. But as we grow older, we gain tools. As kids, we don't have logic. But as we grow up, we gain tools like reason and logic. We become a Christian potentially. We learn how to communicate with words, and we begin to understand how to take care of ourselves better. This means that we don't have to lean on Keating's three programs for happiness. Mm-hmm. We don't have to lean on power and control, safety and security, affection and admiration. The reason why we want to shine light on these lies and wounds is because we're adults now. And as adults, we have the ability to recognize these as lies so that we can begin to learn a new narrative, right? Mm-hmm. We can rewrite a story that is not the lie, but it's based on truth. If we do not recognize these as lies, we continue to over-identify ourselves.
Yeah,
leaning on one of these three Keating's programs, we continue to identify ourselves with those, and we are representing a fractured version of who we are.
Mm-hmm. We get stuck developmentally, relationally, mm-hmm. spiritually. We can't grow.
Yeah.
Can't keep progressing.
Yeah, exactly. Which is to bring it back full circle. This is why, one of the biggest reasons why I love the Enneagram. The Enneagram is a simple tool that uncovers lies that we've told ourselves for our whole lives. It helps us realize how much we can grow into being more like Jesus, by understanding these as lies. And it shines a light on the good and the beautiful about ourselves and the people around us, which is really, really cool. It's not the gospel. It is not Jesus. But it's a really cool tool that we can use, especially as Christians, mm-hmm. to begin to understand a little bit better Jesus's love for us and his love for others, mm-hmm. and how we can replicate that.
That's represent that.
Yeah. Another R word.
One of those.
One of them. So yeah, we'd love to hear y'all's feedback. If you got any questions, please email us, and we'll see y'all next week.
Thanks for listening to The Other Half Podcast. For all the details and links from today's episode, check out the show notes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, leave us a rating and review, or screenshot it to share with your friends on social media, tagging us at Justin Boggs and at Meredith W. Boggs. We'll see you next time on The Other Half Podcast.
See you guys.